Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI, on his first apostolic journey to Malta, meets with victims of clerical sex abuse and promises the Church will do everything in its power to punish abuse by priests and protect young people in the future. We hear from one of the organisers of the Pope's encounter in Malta with young people, who tells us all about the young people of Malta, their aspirations, their problems, their faith, and their expectations regarding Sunday's meeting with the Pope. And as Vatican Radio's correspondent in Malta, Emma McCarthy, reports, Pope invites Maltese faithful to cling to their faith despite the temptations of modern society. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday met with victims of sexual abuse by priests in Malta, saying the Church will do all in its power to punish abusers. The meeting, during which the Pope also expressed his shame and sorrow over what victims and their families have suffered, took place on the second and last day of his first apostolic journey to the Mediterranean island of Malta. Vatican Radio's Emma McCarthy is in Malta with Pope Benedict, and she found time to talk to me about the latest events, just as papal spokesman Father Federico Lombardi ended a press briefing for journalists after the Pope's meeting with the victims. Hello, Emma, and thanks for linking up with me in this very frenetic moment. I understand that the press conference with Father Lombardi has only just finished. It's been, could we say, a salient event of the day.
Absolutely. I don't think there can be any doubts that this has been the moment that perhaps the press themselves and indeed the whole world was waiting for. There had been such speculation ahead of Pope Benedict XVI's visit to Malta over whether he would actually meet with abuse victims. And indeed, it has taken place.
The meeting of the Pope with these persons, victims of abuse, was in the chapel of the Nunciature, some minutes after the coming back of the Pope from the celebration of this morning.
Father Lombardi had always said that if it was to take place, it would be a private meeting, a personal meeting, an encounter between Pope Benedict XVI as a pastor and these people who suffered abuse at the hands of clergy when they were children.
The meeting took place in the chapel of the Nunciature just after this morning's Mass ended, and there were eight men present. Am I correct?
That's correct, Linda. Father Lombardi told journalists that as soon as Pope Benedict XVI arrived at the Nunciature, which is in Rabat, it's not far at all from where the Mass took place in Granary Square, Floriana, he immediately made his way to the chapel of the Apostolic Nunciature there in Rabat. Waiting for him were eight men of the 10 men who are members of this victim's support group. They had asked, they had made the request through their bishops, Bishop Mario Grech of Gozo and Archbishop Paul Cremona of Malta, to be able to meet with the Pope. It was very important for them, so it was an extremely important moment for them. They were abused as children in a home for boys, St. Joseph's Home for Boys.
During what years, Emma?
Most of these men would have been, they're now in their mid to late 30s, so we're speaking about the 1970s and 1980s.
Right.
One of the points that Father Lombardi immediately wanted to stress and make to the international journalists when they asked the questions is that this was a private meeting. It was a personal encounter.
This is an occasion, a sign of taking part, of listening, of engagement also from the side of the Church, and is not a legal event with particular concrete consequences or aspect of legal procedures.
It lasted a little over 20 minutes. It was a moment for the Pope to listen. Once again, we have this word being repeated. It's a word that we heard from his meeting with victims of abuse in America, a word that we heard from his meeting with victims of abuse from Australia. He was listening to their stories. The press statement that was released immediately after this encounter speaks of Pope Benedict's shame and sorrow. Again, we hear this word, shame. It's a very strong word. He first used it on the airplane on his journey to America. And sorrow over what the victims and their families have suffered, because we must remember it's not just the victims themselves who suffer this terrible physical and psychological abuse, but their families also, as a consequence, suffer from it. Father Lombardi said that he listened to the victims and then he asked to pray with the victims, and he assured them that the church is doing and will continue to do all in its power to investigate allegations and to bring to justice those responsible for abuse and to implement effective measures designed to safeguard young people in the future. So once again, highlighting the fact that the church is not shying away from this problem. It recognizes it is a problem, it is a scandal, and it must be addressed. But separating the fact, the need to address this issue from reconciliation, which is a very spiritual, private matter.
Did Father Lombardi make any mention of the atmosphere that presided during the meeting, although it was a private one?
He did indeed.
I had an impression of a serene atmosphere. It was intense, touching, but not oppressive, not difficult. The communication atmosphere was very good.
He said that there was a very familial atmosphere between the bishops of Malta and these eight men. He said it was very obvious to anyone else present at this meeting that they knew each other well, and that there was a very good relationship between the church leaders here in Malta and these men. He said that this helped create a very serene atmosphere in the meeting itself. He said it was in no way aggressive. He said it was in no way an angry meeting or an angry encounter. It was one where there was immense sorrow. There was immense pain, but there was also a certain serenity. There was a serenity that they were having their voices heard, and there was a serenity that they were bringing their stories to the Pope, making him aware of what they lived through.
Ema, what about the atmosphere amongst the journalists? Do you think, did you get the feeling they were satisfied with Father Lombardi's comments?
Something that is that has struck me deeply, Linda, in these days, because of course when we work in Vatican Radio, as you know, we are working within the Vatican itself, so we aren't always exposed to the opinions and to the attitudes of journalists from other news organisations, from other countries, is that they very much more or less, sometimes I get the feeling that they don't want to actually see the facts for what they are when they're quite simple and straightforward. What do I mean by this? The questions they were asking Lombardi, for example, the length of time it's taking these 10 men, even though there were only 8 present this morning, this is a group of 10 men who are trying to have justice served in their cases. I'm not only talking about justice in terms of reconciliation with the church, with seeing their abusers being brought to justice and being dealt with by the church, but also justice within the civilian courts. Right. They are still trying to get that justice. Their trial, their case is being held up in the civilian courts. Now, for some reason, a lot of the journalists here are convinced that this is from to do with church interference. The bishops have been stressing, since the news of these cases first came to light in the lead-up to Pope Benedict's visit to Malta, that it's not the church who's holding up these cases. These cases are being held up in the civic court, that the church leaders themselves, Archbishop Cremona, has appealed to the judges to do something to speed up the cases being heard in the civic courts. The priest who's organising the youth group meeting that Pope Benedict XVI is taking part in on Sunday evening is a Salesian priest who runs a home for boys here in Malta, and he has been following a lot of these abuse victims, and he says that it's hurting them, it's hurting the church and the priests who work with street children, the priests who are trying to help young people who are in prison, the priests who are trying to help young drug addicts, because a lot of people reading international press believe that it's the church holding up these cases being heard in the courts, when in fact it is the slow process of the civil courts. And even though Father Lombardi repeated this again and again, that the church is appealing to the government to speed up the cases of these young men so they can finally have closure to a certain degree, at least closure from seeing the civil cases and the civil trial ending, that it still is a matter that's in the hand of the civil court. So I don't know whether the journalists were actually satisfied with this, because they kept repeating the same question over and over again.
Thank you, Ema. You've been very clear about the press conference and about the meeting. Just briefly, you mentioned the Archbishop Paul Cremona, who, if I'm not mistaken, this morning at the Mass took it upon himself actually to speak out and say that the Church must recognise the failures and sins of its members.
Absolutely. Archbishop Cremona welcoming Pope Benedict XVI to Granary Square. That was absolutely packed. I can't describe how dense the crowds were at the Mass this morning. He said, today we are searching especially for new evangelization.
Society has changed, and it is a challenge for the Catholic Church to examine itself and its methods of evangelization.
He said that we know that in the light of these changing conditions of the Church, that we cannot just cling to a model of the Church to which we have been accustomed for decades. We have to return to the Church as it unfolds in the Acts of the Apostles, a Church which centers around the listening to and sharing of the Word in the Eucharist, a Church humble enough to recognize the failures and sins in its members, but strong enough to count on the presence of the Holy Spirit, a Church which does not seek privileges but merely strives just to deliver the good news of the Lord. So he's definitely asking the Church to do more, to return to being a simpler, humbler Church, to getting back to basics.
And he's certainly not hiding behind the hedge. He's being very outspoken.
Absolutely. I have to say, hats off to the Maltese bishops. They have never been afraid to answer any journalists' questions on this issue. Every single time a query has been brought out, their response has been immediate with the facts of the case. And if the Church, as in the case of these 10 men who suffered abuses, children, was wrong, sinned gravely, seriously, then it has to be admitted. It cannot be denied in any way.
Ema, now I don't want to think that the whole visit has been overshadowed by this issue, although of course it's forefront on the agenda. What is the atmosphere in Malta? How joyous are the people to be receiving Pope Benedict at this rather particular time?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Linda, because while of course this issue is dominating the journalists here, the international journalists, over 300 of them, and while this issue is dominating international media, and while this issue is probably in the minds of a lot of our listeners who read the newspapers every day, listen to the news, watch the television, the Maltese people themselves know the bishops are doing what they're doing. They know the Church is doing what it's doing. It's best to resolve this issue. And beyond that, they don't really care because their Pope is here. To say that this is a festival of the faith is an understatement. There is such a party atmosphere on the streets of Malta, Linda. It's very difficult to describe, but I will try to do so. Walking along the capital of Valletta, the predominant colour here in Valletta is sandstone. It's a very light pale yellow. When I first arrived on Thursday, it was all I could see, the pale yellow bricks of these houses built and hewn into the hills of Malta with their green balconied windows and roofs. Well, if you go out there today, all you're going to see is yellow and white.
Flags.
Every single surface has been covered with flags, with coloured sheets, with banners. The flowers have been organised on the windows that they were once multicoloured. They're now all yellow and white. They have old people walking around with baseball caps on their heads. They're waving banners arm in arm with the young people. This is another thing that struck me. It's not just the elderly people. It's not just the young people. It's across generations, families. They've been picnicking on the Granary Square where the Mass was held this morning. They're picnicking there because this evening, of course, is Pope Benedict XVI's meeting with the young people. They have no intention of going home. This is an all-day party here in Malta.
Thanks there to Ema McCarthy for that detailed report on Father Lombardi's briefing to journalists, and also for her vivid account of the atmosphere in Malta. Yes, the music you're listening to is straight from the port of Valletta, where the Pope is meeting with young people before flying back to the Vatican. One of the people who has been deeply involved in organising this encounter with young people is Salesian priest Father Savio Vella. Ema met with him before the meeting actually took place with a number of questions regarding the young people of Malta, their aspirations, their problems, their faith, and their expectations regarding today's meeting with the Pope.
Ever since we got the wonderful news that His Holiness Pope Benedict wanted to have a meeting with young people here in Malta, we started with going through a consultation process with young people, asking them what they wanted to come out of this meeting with his Holiness. And there are two major messages that the young people decided upon. One is that they wanted to emphasize that our church is an inclusive church, which means that the church wants no one to remain at the periphery or to be emarginated, no matter what difficulties that they would be facing with their faith and social level. Everyone is invited to remain within the Christian community and seek support within the community. We immediately embarked on a number of meetings with groups of young people who feel that they are emarginated, with young people at the correctional facilities, that's the prisons, young people going through rehabilitation programs, young people from the gay community, young people facing faith problems in their daily lives, and young people who feel that they have been hurt in one way or another by the church, including young people sexual abuse, and young immigrants. All of them will be one way or another represented during this meeting with His Holiness Pope Benedict.
Now, one of the most interesting aspects of this preparation has been, as you said, you went into the prisons. You went into the prisons, you and the young people who are organising this event, to speak to other young people whose lives, unfortunately, have taken a turn for the worse. But basically to bring a message of hope, to let them know they're not left out.
That's right. In fact, we also have agreed with the prison authorities that they will actually organise themselves so that they can bring a group of young people for the meeting with the Pope. And they will be actually represented by one of them who will be addressing His Holiness. Because during these meetings, we took notes of what these young people's hurts are, what their aspirations are, what their faith problems are, the way that they look at the church, what their expectations from the church are. And we included them within the address that is being delivered to the Pope on Sunday.
By one of these young people?
Precisely. There will be four young people addressing the Pope during the meeting. One of them will be representing the people who feel emarginated, and this will be one of the prison inmates who will be delivering this address. And he will be talking in the name of these young people. The second group is the committed young people, committed within the church, young people belonging to different Christian groups and parishes. And they will also be talking about their aspirations, about their involvement within the church, about their problems with the church as well, in the sense that they also have their own faith problems and they also have their own difficulties in finding or being given space to be protagonists within the church. The third category of young people will be there. We have a young couple preparing for marriage, and they will be talking in the name of all young people preparing for marriage or young married couples. And they will be talking about the difficulties that they are finding in actually adhering to the Christian faith and living Christian values within the family. Yeah? And the fourth category of young people would be a person representing young people who have started on a journey of vocational discernment to either the priestly life or the religious life, the consecrated life. And they also would be talking about the way that they perceive the church, their aspirations for the church, their difficulties that they are finding in being accepted within the society, in a fragmented society. And we're all looking forward to the response of His Holiness. And obviously, both the address of the young people and the response of His Holiness will serve as a basis for us to project and plan our evangelization program for the next 2-3 years.
What age group of young people are we talking about here? We're not talking about, children. We're talking, obviously, about adolescents and young adults. So what age group are we talking about?
Yes, precisely. Well, we work with 16-plus young people. Young people beyond the secondary level of education. It's the age group where we actually challenge them on their faith, in the sense that we know that being an island, the tendency might be to sort of be cut off from reality, be cut off from the rest of the world. That is the popular perception, which is wrong. Here in Malta, we're quite open. We're quite an open society. We do believe firmly in our Christian roots and in our Christian culture, but we're very much aware of what's going on abroad. We're very much aware of what's going on in other cultures. We're very much aware of the different, the other different religions and the other different philosophies and all that. And we are very open about it because we talk openly about it. We challenge each other about it. And the age group that I'm talking about is precisely this age group where they go through this discernment program. Okay, and we actually try to accompany them in rediscovering their faith. And they have to come back to us, to the church, I mean, and bring in their experiences and also help the church to understand what the young people are going through nowadays.
So for our listeners who are listening in from Britain or America or Africa, how would you describe the main challenges facing these people between 18 and 35? Would they be similar to those in every other society? Those of, I don't know, as you said, substance abusers, of perhaps breakdown in relationships. Can you describe for us?
Yes, precisely. But our young people are not different from any other young people of different cultures and different nations. Yes, they do have problems with relationships. They have problems with substance abuse. We do have not a big criminal problem, because criminality is at all-time low here in Malta at the moment. But we do have problems. Definitely. Our young people know their Christian roots. They are informed, very well informed. But they definitely need experiences. And they do have negative experiences about life as well, because our young people travel. They meet other young people coming in through the tourist industry here in Malta. So we're not insular. We are an island, but we're definitely not insular.
One of the main themes of Pope Benedict's pontificate, particularly when he's speaking to young people, he constantly speaks to them to be aware of secularization, of consumerism. Are young people in Malta more tendent to their main ambition, their main concern is with earning, with getting the perfect job, the perfect house, the perfect wife, the perfect life?
Definitely, yes. They are just the same as any other young people. And we do have that problem. But we're serene about it, in the sense that we do face this problem, and we try to learn to live with it, in the sense that we just cannot bury our heads in the sand and think that we do not have these problems. The nice thing about it is that, as I said, yes, we challenge each other about it. Our young people are not afraid to challenge the church, and the church is not afraid to challenge young people. It is a very open relationship, and that is how we want it. Obviously, we are aware of the fact that as a church, we do lack the language, the necessary language to reach young people's hearts and minds. But we also accept that. We are aware of it. And therefore, we are making progress in that as well, in the fact that that we are trying to involve young people within the church and wanting them to be protagonists in their church. We do try to give them space, and we actually ask them, you know, to give us the language that is necessary for them to understand, so that we can accompany them in their journey of faith.
Of course, protagonists in their church doesn't necessarily mean, you know, bring the electric guitar up to the altar and let's sing the Our Father. We need to be almost very specific in saying being protagonists means knowing about their faith, reading the gospel, learning the catechism, but most importantly being familiar enough with it to go out and put it into action with other young people.
Precisely. And I will add to that, in the sense that we emphasize a lot the importance of making an experience of Christ.
Well, thanks again to Emma McCarthy there, who was speaking to Salesian Father Savio Vella. And summing up briefly, Pope Benedict arrived in Malta on Saturday and was greeted outside the presidential residence by several thousand Maltese children singing happy birthday to the pontiff, who had just turned 83. As is customary during all apostolic visits, the Pope paid a courtesy visit to the President of the Republic, Mr. Giorgio Bella, before travelling to the Grotto of St. Paul in Rabat to pray. This pilgrimage to Malta has been planned in the footsteps of St. Paul, who was shipwrecked on the island for 3 months as he was escorted to Rome to stand trial. Pope Benedict is actually celebrating 1,950 years from that shipwreck, and although his visit lasts just over 24 hours, it has been dense with events. As Ema mentioned earlier on Sunday morning, Pope Benedict presided at an open-air mass in Floriana's Granary Square, packed to capacity with some 10,000 people. During the mass, the Pope invited Maltese faithful to cling to their faith despite the temptations of modern society. And as Ema McCarthy reports, he also warned against believing that today's advanced technology can answer all our needs and save us from the perils and dangers that beset us.
Beneath the simple white cross that adorned the wooden altar, the Archbishop of Malta, Paul Cremona, welcomed the Pope with these words. "Today we are searching especially for a new evangelization." He said the Church had a mission of love to witness to its faith and the values inherent in it, especially the sanctity of life from the moment of conception, the dignity of every person, and the importance of a stable family based on marriage.
"We have to return to the Church as it unfolds in the Acts of the Apostles. A church which centers around the listening to and the sharing of the word and the Eucharist. A church which thrives on the personal experience of Christ. A church humble enough to recognize the failures and sins in its members, but strong enough to count on the presence of the Holy Spirit. A church which does not seek privileges, but merely strives just to deliver the good news of the Lord."
In his homily, Pope Benedict noted that no visitor to Malta could fail to be impressed by the people's devotion. He spoke of the first Christian visitor to touch their shores, the apostle to the Gentiles, Paul, in the year 60 AD. "Many have since disembarked," he continued, praising Malta's discernment in knowing how to draw upon the best of what they have had to offer.
"I urge you to continue to do so. Not everything that today's world proposes is worthy of acceptance by the people of Malta. Many voices try to persuade us to put aside our faith in God and His Church and choose for ourselves the values and beliefs by which to live. They tell us we have no need of God or the Church."
But reflecting on the first reading taken from the Acts of the Apostles, the reading known as the Gospel of Malta that recounts the shipwreck of St. Paul, Pope Benedict urged the faithful of Malta to follow Paul's example and place their trust in the Lord.
"It is tempting to think that today's advanced technology can answer all our needs and save us from all the perils and dangers that beset us. But it is not so. At every moment of our lives, we depend entirely on God, in whom we live and move and have our being. Only He can protect us from harm. Only He can guide us through the storms of life. Only He can bring us to a safe haven, as He did for Paul and his companions, adrift off the coast of Malta."
Following the celebration of the Eucharist before reciting the Regina Caeli, Pope Benedict XVI greeted Bishop Mario Grech of Gozo, who had accompanied thousands of pilgrims from the neighbouring island to attend today's Mass. They had brought with them an icon from the Marian Sanctuary of Our Lady of Tapinu. To resounding applause, the Holy Father gifted them a golden rose to be placed at the foot of the Virgin.
"I ask in particular to pray to her under the title Queen of the Family, a title added to the Litany of Loreto by my loved predecessor, Pope John Paul II, himself on more than one occasion a visitor to these shores. In offering you this tangible memento of my own visit, I thank you for all that I have received from you in return, especially for the warmth of your devotion and the support of your prayers for my ministry as the successor of Peter."
From Malta, with Pope Benedict XVI, I'm Ema McCarthy.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.